With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Welcome in to First Things First. I'm Sarah Kunstock filling in for Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That's Nick Wright. How are you guys doing? Thank you.
Doing great.
Thanks for having me. That's how I feel like it is. No better place to be on a Friday.
We wish our girl Jenna well. She's sick, under the weather. She's fighting it. Gonna get a long weekend. She also told me privately in the meeting, I'm getting a long weekend. I've been working hard, Chris.
She did the smart thing, which is to start on Wednesday. Thursday, oh no, I'm fine, guys, I'm fighting through it. That way nobody doubts
She's
you when you're sick on Friday.
She's got two young ones, though.
Jenna, we got you. We understand.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's start with the marquee matchup of the weekend. Aaron Rodgers heading to Foxborough to face Tom Brady. These two squaring off as starters for just the second time ever. Two of the best to ever play the position. Head coach Mike McCarthy didn't exactly undersell the matchup. Take a listen.
To the best of all time. I mean, I think you really appreciate not only what they do on the field from a quarterback position, but, you know, really their contributions to the game of football, and then on top of that, what they do as men outside of the game of football. But, I mean, this is if you wanted to study how to play quarterback, then you need to watch that game Sunday night.
All right, CeCe, well, what's the key to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers upsetting Tom Brady and the Patriots?
Well, I think Aaron Rodgers and McCarthy, they're going to have to be very aggressive. Because every time that, and I had to go back to some of the matchups that I listened to Belichick's press conferences. Because a lot of times he doesn't tell you anything. But 5% of the time, Sarah, he tells you little tidbits of what he really, and when a player is great, I don't care if it's a punter, place kicker, man, he goes out of his way to explain to the general public. Because really, the key to Belichick in a press conference, you have to ask him a really football-related question about the upcoming game. And they asked him about Aaron Rodgers and what he thought. And, man, he went on and on as one of the greatest quarterbacks. And he said, I faced a lot of greats, but he's one of the greatest challenges that I've ever faced. So in doing that, I go back to some other games that he coached against great players. Most recently, Peyton Manning. And he's always had a very, very aggressive attitude, not as far as defensively how he's going to go after these guys, but how he's going to play offense with Tom Brady. He will go for it more on fourth down. So I'm saying that to say this. McCarthy's got to be extra aggressive because we know that New England's going to be aggressive. So when you go against him, you can't play conservative. You can't play scared. People will talk about, oh, man, you can't turn the ball over. Well, let me tell you what you got to do. You can't not take chances.
Right.
And you got to try to throw the ball down the field. You got to try to make big plays. But the most important thing has to be scoring in the red zone. When Green Bay gets in the red zone, because they will, it's easy to move the ball between the 20s on the Pats year after year. But where are they excellent? That's in red zone defense. And the Pats have to be able to get seven. So if they are able to get in the red zone four times, they got to come away with at least four touchdowns.
I think this game actually sets up relatively well for the Packers, as well as a game in New England could set up in this regard. We don't know what Gronk's status is. We also, I would be surprised if Sony Michel plays. He's been limited in practice all week. And this year, the Pats have had three great offensive games. All of those games were great Sony Michel games. When they've been one-dimensional, when they have not had a dominant or reliable rushing attack, they haven't cracked 30 points. Now, there's the game where they scored 38 against the Bears, but two of those were special teams touchdowns.
Yeah, so offensively, they've been
in the mid-20s. Additionally, you know what I think Green Bay can look to? They don't have to look back to years back of film. Monday night, the Bills did a good job defensively against New England.
Yes.
Now, the Bills' offense is a disaster, so they weren't able to take advantage of doing a good job. But The Pats didn't score a touchdown through three quarters. The Bills did a good job of keeping them out of the end zone when they got to the red zone. The Pats kicked two 25-yard field goals in that game. That means they were inside the 10 and couldn't score. So I do think there is a template that Green Bay can take from their own success last week against a potent offense in the Rams, from their own success last week offensively against a defense that's better than New England's, and from the fact that if New England doesn't have the hammer of Sony Michel, we have seen this year where Brady will turn the ball over that their offense is not quite as deadly as it's been in years past.
What about with Gronk? You mentioned we don't know if Gronk is going to play. He didn't practice yesterday. How does that change the matchup if he's not on the field?
Well, one thing's going to change is the Sony Michel Gronk absent is huge for their offense. Gronk would probably be their second-best offensive lineman, if he was just an offensive lineman. Now, with some injuries, his blocking hadn't been as good as it's been in years past, but he is still a great pass protector, great in the run game. So now you take him and Sony Michel, who's going to be their main runner? James White has not been a featured running back, not in high school, not in college. So I just believe that the combination of both these players potentially be out, it really affects Tom where he wants to go to. And to me, Gronk has not been able to, even if he plays, he hasn't played to the level where I need to double team him.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm going to give him single coverage. So even if he does play in the game, he hadn't been as effective. He hadn't been a deep threat. Did come up with the big pass play, great spectacular catch down the sideline in last week's game in Buffalo. But that's where I'm going to take my chance. They do miss Gronk. He's a huge part of their running game, and he's their best wide receiver.
So here's something that, whether Gronk plays or not, that I think Green Bay has to focus on. This shocked me when I saw it this morning. The Patriots have committed the seventh most turnovers in football this year. 13 turnovers. Here are the only teams in the league who've committed more turnovers than the Patriots. Tell me what they all have in common. Tampa, Buffalo, San Francisco, Jacksonville, Arizona, and the Jets. All of those teams either have a disaster at quarterback or a rookie at quarterback. The Patriots are next on that turnover list. That is so rare for them. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons they have had this sustained level of success is every year they do a great job of taking care of the football. You remember post-Deflategate, we saw, oh, wait, they never fumble the football. Like, in addition to Brady not throwing too many interceptions. So I think this is a game that Green Bay has to win the turnover battle. I think this is a game that, to your point, they have to get seven every time they're down in the red zone. But the other thing is, and we don't lead with this commentary because it's the obvious commentary. It's what everyone's going to say. Aaron Rodgers got to be great. How does Green Bay beat good teams? Aaron Rodgers has to be great. There's been one game in the last year, that 365 days, that the Packers have had a running back go for 100 yards. Once. Prior to last week, their season high for one player was 65 yards. Last week, they had an 86-yard rusher. Like, you know, for the Packers offense to be able to score with New England, they're going to have to do it through the air with Aaron Rodgers.
CeCe, put in perspective, with that being said, I know they're not on the field at the same time, but put into perspective this game, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, what it means to a player, understanding just how special it is with this matchup.
Oh, they know. Because Aaron has an arrogance about him, and we see it all the time. Tom Brady realizes he's the great, but realizes his semen is still, it's still wet. But even in his interview earlier in the week, he said Aaron Rodgers' play at quarterback has even inspired him. So he's just said, just talking to a lot of quarterbacks, they're inspired by watching Aaron Rodgers play. And me being the greatest quarterback that there is, he's one of the guys that I look to who inspires me to play better because he doesn't have the physical gifts, but he operates at quarterback as high as levels we've seen. So I know Tom Brady takes pride in everything he does, but I can guarantee he knows this is very rare. Might be the last time he ever sees Aaron Rodgers. And I know the last time Tom Brady, he'd like to leave a mark. He talked about that a lot with Peyton Manning. He had a lot of matchups with Peyton Manning. So I believe Tom has a lot of personal pride in what he's doing, and this will be an extra special Sunday even for Brady.
We almost got to see these two in a Super Bowl. The Pats-Seahawks Super Bowl is almost the Pats-Packers Super Bowl. Packers had a big lead late, onside kick, overtime loss ends up depriving us of that opportunity. Because they're in opposite conferences, they only play once every 4 years. Since Rodgers become the starter, this would be the third time they played. But the 15-1 season for Green Bay, the one game Aaron Rodgers missed, was the one game they were supposed to play the Patriots. So this will be, unless they play in the Super Bowl in the next couple years, the last time these two guys ever play. I don't care what Brady says. He's not playing four more years.
Right, right, absolutely.
This will be the last time we see these two guys play. And both of them, I'm sure, deep down, don't love the comparison to the other guy. Like, Brady can say all these things, but I'm sure deep down, when he's talking to Giselle, when he's talking to his closest friends, man, I've been to 8 Super Bowls. Yeah. Does this guy have 8 playoff wins? Like, I'm sure that's Brady's feeling, and I'm sure Rodgers deep down's like, do you guys watch the games? Come on. Who's better? So do you watch the games? Like, give me a break. And so in that regard, they're obviously not going to be able to. It's not a safety against a quarterback or a D end against a quarterback. They're not going to be able to go up against each other in that regard. But for both of these guys who carry themselves with a very deserved ego and confidence, this is as big of a regular season matchup as there can be.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, it's going to be fun. Can Drew Brees and the Saints outscore the high-flying Rams? That's next on First Things First. We'll get to Rams Saints in a second, but first, Thursday night football, Nick Mullins throws to Greg Kittle, who makes the one-handed grab.
This was a great play by Kittle. There were a lot of big Niners plays that were about the Raiders not being ready to play.
Didn't we talk about George Kittle yesterday?
Well, Greg Kittle is who I think we talked about.
Didn't we talk about him yesterday?
Yes, him too.
Yeah, I just read the bar, what the bar says. What does that say?
His name's George. I screwed it up.
Oh, not okay.
You. Oh, I screwed it up.
Oh, my bad. Whoever. We talked about Kittle.
He's having the best, season
former
any tight end PFF.
Girl. I blew that.
To the
my
NBA.
Apologies.
I started it all. Russell Westbrook breaks out the Sham God move against the Hornets. How do you like that?
Oh, the Sham God. Oh. I love that.
Every night he's treating us with a little, we're going to rock the baby. Mm-hmm. Oh, let's give him a little Sham God.
Now they just need to get
look
some wins,
him.
Though.
Oh, what is that? Look at him.
That's one of the reasons why you like him.
Yep.
College basketball, St. John's, LJ Figueroa delivers a thunderous putback jam in an exhibition game versus Maryville.
I'm going to go to some of these St. John's games this year.
Okay.
I didn't take advantage of that last year being in New York City. I'm going to go to some of these
St. John's
games.
I'm calling their opener Tuesday.
Oh, well, there you go. Excited
you
to see that.
You should come on out. Come support.
There we go.
I got to look at my appointment book.
Chris
Mullins. I'm in Brooklyn.
Come on, Chris
Mullins. I'm at the Garden. Man, let me see if I can squeeze in
around.
Some college basketball.
Moving on to America's game of the week. The undefeated Rams heading to New Orleans to take on the Saints. Two of the NFL's best offenses facing off, trying to secure prime playoff position. Here's Drew Brees on facing off against Los Angeles.
It's exciting. It's a great challenge. But here's the thing. It's one game, you know, and yes, it's a big game. Yes, it's against a great opponent who is undefeated and is playing exceptionally well right now. But for us, it's just another opportunity for us to take the next step to continue to improve. I like the track that we're on, but we can still get better.
You know, we know what to expect. We know, you know the talent they got. You know, we got a great game plan. We've been putting in today and you know, come Sunday, we're going to just got to put it all on paper, or put it all together and go out there and, you know, play our game.
All right, Nick, which team has the edge on Sunday?
Listen,
the Saints, the Rams.
Vegas says there is no edge. The Saints were 1-point favorites. Now the Rams are 1-point favorites. It's probably going to settle on a pick 'em. I think by the slightest of margins, I'll say the New Orleans Saints because of where the game is. I think the Rams are the better complete team. But one of the reason why, the biggest reason why I believe the Rams are the only undefeated team in football is Todd Gurley. And this is a stat that I saw it. I didn't believe it. I had our great statistician, Dusty, triple check it.
Sometimes he's great.
And today he's been great so far. I've been on the air 17 minutes. We'll see how long it goes. You know who has the number one rush defense in all of football? The Saints. Mm. That's shocking. That is something you would never expect. And so if you can even just a little bit slow down Todd Gurley, then the Rams become a beatable football team. I think the Saints have gone through a tougher schedule. I think the Saints have historically, the years they've been good, the reason they've been good is they have been unbeatable at home. And for all those reasons, again, I'm not going to go to war with anyone that says they think the Rams are slightly in a better position. I think it's very close, but I think the Saints have the edge, and the Saints know this game is wildly important for them. The Rams have a very soft next few weeks. The Saints know that they end the year, see? Carolina, Pittsburgh, Carolina.
Yep.
They better have some wins stacked. They also know that if they want any shot of having the one seed in the conference. This is a must-win game. For all those reasons, I give the slight edge to New Orleans in what I think could be the best game of the weekend.
If you're a New Orleans fan, this is what you should be concerned at. Even though you do have that number one rush defense, this is the most difficult challenge that they will face because the Rams do a lot of motion. They predominantly play one formation, three wide receivers and Todd Gurley looking right at you. They do a lot of different things, but they really want to run the ball at you, Sarah. It's a lot of hocus pocus, a lot of smoke and mirrors, but ultimately, as our guy Sting said, they just want to kiss you right in the mouth. Bam! They want to run downhill and be able to be physical. So I just believe in this game because Dennis Allen, I had conversations with him. He felt like their defense was going to come around after getting off to a very shaky start in week number one and week number two. But Davenport, their number one rookie that they traded up for, he's out. Yep. Him being injured. He was playing some spectacular football, starting to find his way as a rookie. Now, on the positive standpoint, Lattimore, their cornerback, who got off to a rough start, he is playing the best football, coming off the game last week against the Vikings, probably his second-best game of the season. So there are some things I'm concerned about defensively. They're going to miss Davenport, and you can't have Lattimore in too much man-to-man. And what they're facing with the Rams, I don't think that they have the answer for it defensively. I think this is going to be one of the most exciting games we've seen in the 18 season.
With all that score, I mean, does that change the approach of Sean Payton or Sean McVay or how they combat what they're up against?
We did see last week when the Rams' offense was stalling the aggression on that fake punt.
Yes.
We saw it in the first half. They didn't wait for it to be panic time. They said, no, we're going to try to give ourselves a jolt right now. Now, that ended up not even being one of the two biggest special teams plays the Rams made. We know Sean Payton is not afraid to be aggressive. We know Sean Payton will trust Drew Brees, trust his offense, maybe use Taysom Hill in some odd formations or on those fourth and short situations. I just think the Saints go into this game, and they know if we lose this game, our ceiling is the two seed. If we lose this game, we top out at hoping the Rams lose or having to go to Los Angeles in the playoffs. If they win this game, it's still on the board for them that if these two teams play again, it'll be in this same building. So I just think for the you talk a lot, see, about who's more desperate. Neither team's desperate when it's 6-1 against 8-0.
Right.
But this game means more to New Orleans as far as what the projection of their season is.
Yeah, with the new rule changes, Sarah, special teams aren't – they don't have the game is not offense a third, defense a third, special teams a third because they've negated some of the kicks. Those percentages are down. But these two teams, very, very aggressive as far as special teams, and they have great special teams. We saw last week where the Rams gained an advantage, gained the possession by attempting it on fourth down by having their punter throw a pass. Now – Mike Westhoff, the special teams coordinator for the Saints, is one of the legendary special teams coach. And they have Taysom Hill, the quarterback, returning. So look for them to maybe do some trick plays. So I do believe these coaching staffs will be far more aggressive. And this year, like no other year, man, we've seen more coaches going for it on fourth down, going for 2 points to try to win games. So I think that's an ongoing trend in the league, coaches being more aggressive.
What's very interesting about these two teams, they have one thing offensively that's very similar and one thing that couldn't be more different. The similarity is they never go 3-and-out. The Rams have the fewest 3-and-outs in the league. The Saints have the third fewest. Like, you're not getting a quick stop against either one of these two teams. They're offenses are too potent. But the Saints have been great this year at long touchdown drives. 10-plus play touchdown drives, third most in the NFL. The Rams, shockingly, have the fewest. Now, you wouldn't think a team that is third in the league in scoring 33 points a game, would be the fewest of anything that's a positive offensive stat. But it's because they have been more quick strike. They have been more, we're going to give it to Gurley, make you trust that play action, and then hit you over the head with Cup or with Brandon Cooks.
And that's one thing to watch as we go forward. Because right now, them being 8-0, we'll start to compare them with some of the scoring that they do, with some of the greatest scoring teams that we've seen. But most of those teams that have been the highest scoring teams, that being 07 Pats, 98 Vikings, those teams came up short and didn't win a Super Bowl because of it was too much big play.
Too much.
And when you get into these playoff games and you have to grind it out and you don't have those quick strikes. So as we watch the Rams and they get in some games that are a little more highly contested, let's watch that and let's see if their lack of a big play comes that back to be able to hurt them.
We talked so much about Todd Gurley, but he had said this week we wouldn't be in the position we're at without Jared Goff. Mm-hmm. What have you seen out of him this season and just the jump that he's made?
I've been so impressed by him. What did I – going into the year, see, you know I wanted to pick the Rams to win the Super Bowl because I liked their offseason. Forget locker room chemistry. Forget guy off the field issues. Give me talent. The only reason I didn't was in a conference with Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees and Cousins comes over there. Russell Wilson's there. Carson Wentz coming back. I was like, man, can I trust Jared Goff?
And you did the right thing, Nick, too, because – all these quarterbacks, people just want you to, after a couple of good games, Deshaun Watson, Nick was like, listen, that dude's a baller. Mm-hmm. Or Patty Mahomes, I'm telling you, that dude's a baller. And he's like, listen, I'm just a little bit on golf. I don't, he said, I'm not saying it's real, but I just want to see some more. And I thought that was very, very good on your part by, listen, some of these guys, we don't know.
And because we had seen such awful football from Goff in year one. Right. And then excellent football in year two. I just wondered, was he going to regress a little bit? He's gotten better. Like I said, that if Jared Goff just maintains his level, the Rams will be the best team in the league. He's gotten better. Now, to Todd Gurley's point, what Todd Gurley also knows is the three games the Rams have come closest to losing, that's against Seattle, that's against Denver, and that's last week against the Packers. Against Seattle and Denver, those were the two worst games Goff played all year. And against Green Bay, that was the worst first half he had played all year. So if you're going to beat the Rams, you have to stop Jared Goff. There's no stopping Todd Gurley. The way to beat the Rams is to force Jared Goff into a mediocre game. So I think the Saints' rush defense will help slow down Gurley, but they have to find a way to get to Jared Goff.
Coming up, we are not talking about a high-powered offense.
No.
How has it gotten so bad for the Raiders so fast? That's next on First Things First. Tomorrow, the 10th-ranked Buckeyes look to get back in business against Nebraska at 11:30 Eastern. Yep.
Then let's go, Urban.
Big 12 contenders West Virginia and Texas clash at 3:30 Eastern. That's coming your way tomorrow on Fox, or you can watch anywhere on the Fox Sports app.
All right, I'm letting the staff know something. C earlier in the week said he was inviting everyone over to watch college football. He's revoking that invitation.
What?
His lovely wife just got back from a week out of town. There is no way you're still having people over. No chance. I have your back. I'm revoking it on your behalf.
Man,
that's
she
smart.
Was out there chasing
that's
the Lakers.
Smart.
Man,
I like that.
Listen.
Some quality
Nick Wright
time
runs
pursuit.
Around his house
quality
in Harlem.
Quality time pursuit.
CC runs his house.
Oh, okay.
And time. I know she sleep. I know she ain't watching. I'm tough. I'm mean. I run it.
Oh, let's say
tough till Sue wakes up. Time for us to go viral. This week, rookie Luka Doncic played his favorite player, LeBron. And look at this interaction pregame. Luka just cheesing.
Yeah, he's
and
excited.
Check out the moment postgame. Luka got LeBron's game-worn jersey signed. How cool of a moment is this, Nick?
This is cool. Luka, in my eyes, is going to end up being the best European player to come into the league since Dirk. I will tell you this. Luka's very lucky LeBron made that last free throw. Because if LeBron missed two free throws at the end of the game and they lost, he ain't giving no jersey away. There are no post-game pleasantries. He is gone. So, but that's a really cool thing.
Yeah, that's what I used to do too a lot. I just went through my box. I have a bunch of NFL legends, Montana, Manning, Aikman, all those. After the game, just like that, send my equipment. I ain't have security like LeBron and everything. Send the equipment.
Did you give away a lot of your jerseys?
Yeah, if they want, but I was trying to get theirs. Most of them probably said, yeah, they don't have it. Like, I still have theirs, but yeah.
You ever have, like, a young up-and-coming corner that maybe was in your division that as a rookie you tried to give a jersey to, be nice to, maybe?
No, I ain't giving away. No, I'm not giving away. I'm giving them lessons. I'm trying to lay hands
on them.
Hey,
young pup, here you go. All right, time for some stories to start your morning. The Celtics got a big win over the previously undefeated Milwaukee Bucks. Boston hit a franchise record 24 threes with Kyrie Irving leading the way with 28 points. Nick, how impressed were you with Kyrie and the Celtics?
Second straight game that Kyrie's looked like Kyrie after a very poor start to the season.
What do you mean he looked like Kyrie? What do you mean?
Looked like one of the, I don't know, 16 best players in basketball, look like a franchise point guard, look like someone that you want to give a max contract to. Beginning of the year, he didn't look anything like that. The story of this game, though, was the threes. They hit 20 threes in the first three quarters. Yeah. The fact that Milwaukee had a chance to tie it late was a credit to their comeback, but excellent game by Kyrie.
I think Nick and I were conversating, and what he's saying is Kyrie looks special, but he also looks special part of the team. Because like, he's an individual ball player. How does he fit in the Brad system with these other young players? Jaylen Brown being out, he looked special playing within their system and last night.
Kyrie had 4 points with 2 minutes left in the first half. Really turned it on into the first half, into the second.
Good to see. The Sixers, meanwhile, defeated the Clippers 122-113. They were led by a monster game from Joel Embiid, who had 41 points and 13 rebounds. Nick, is this the level Embiid has to play at for the Sixers to be successful?
And for the time being, yes. Right now, they have not been as good defensively as they thought they would be. Ben Simmons is waiting till midseason to unveil that new jump shot he's been working on.
Oh,
and so, I mean, Embiid, this is his sixth 30-10 game of the year. His sixth 30. This one was 40-10, of course. He was great. Yeah, he's got to play at this level.
Sarah, I saw you. I saw you still working on your jump shot. You were shooting it in a dress and in
and heels.
Now, I just wish maybe you might be able to help out Ben Simmons.
It's about Embiid.
No, it's not. I'm done with it. That was your part of the highlight.
Okay.
Ben Simmons, sir, can you do that? Can you do you offer out tips to be able to help people with their jump shot?
How much are they going to pay me, though?
Oh, he's got money.
He's got some money.
I mean, he's got bank. Okay. Yeah, so he can pay the fee.
Good game, Embiid. That was your preseason MVP
I'll make the intro.
Okay.
It's more important to get
next
some
hour. Next hour. The college football top three matchup this weekend as Alabama heads to Baton Rouge to take on LSU. This game is often billed as a rivalry, but LSU hasn't defeated Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide since 2011. CeCe, what are you expecting in this matchup?
Oh, man, I'm hoping that it's close. If they can get after the quarterback, being LSU, because when they have won the game, that's what they've been able to do. Make Alabama one-dimensional. I believe this is the best Alabama team since I've been watching football. And
wow.
That's a long, long time because of what they can do at the quarterback. This is the first time we've seen an Alabama team that you can see the speed of all the five-star wide receivers and running backs because their quarterback's so good.
So you think this is the best Alabama team over the course of time that they've won, what, half dozen national championships?
Yes.
That this is the best one? If LSU's going to win, if Alabama doesn't lose this game, they won't lose a game all year. This is the only chance left on their schedule for them to lose, including the college football playoff. If they're going to lose, LSU's got to score a defensive touchdown. They have to score with their offense on the sideline.
At least one.
I mean, they're going to have to turn Alabama over repeatedly, and I think score on defense or special teams. Alabama's just too high-powered offense to go along with a typical great Alabama.
Watch for Joe Bauer, though, the quarterback at LSU, transfer from Ohio State. Biggest game of his life. I believe he's ready for it.
Finally, another big game in the NFL this weekend. The 5-2 Chargers heading to Seattle to face Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. Seattle has won 4 of its last 5 games, and Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn referred to them as the hottest team in the NFL. CeCe, what will be the key for Russell Wilson and the Seahawks to continue their winning ways against Phillip Rivers and the Chargers?
The surprising thing about Russell Wilson is, and watching him and watching him up closely, is that Russ is doing it, but he's doing it very, very different than how he's done it before. If you look at right now, at this stage of his career, only 3 rush attempts a game, the lowest of his career since he's been in the league. People would find that out to be, well, how's he getting it done? He is a pocket passer, but because the offensive line has gotten better, they've played more time together, he's able to sit in the pocket and be more comfortable. He's one of the best pure throwers that we have in the league. He is a bona fide playmaker, and now him not have to scramble for his life. So for me, that's the key. Can they be consistent and offer him the protection? On the other side, Phillip Rivers, people think, well, what is Phillip Rivers? What's the key to him at this point in his career? He's getting rushed less than any point in his career. So he's able to sit back and, I believe, one of the better group of weapons that he's been able to have with his wide receivers. So how they're going to rush the passer for Seattle? Can they get after Russell? And if the Seahawks cannot make Phillip Rivers make him uncomfortable in the pocket, I don't believe that Seattle can beat the Chargers.
To your point, Phillip Rivers only being pressured on 20% of his pass attempts this year is one of the lowest, if not the lowest, in his career. I want to give Seattle a ton of credit. This speaks to culture, coach, quarterback. This team was 0-2, knowing that they didn't have Richard Sherman, knowing that Earl Thomas wanted out, was demanding out, was holding out, knowing that they were doing a total overhaul of their defense, which is how they became the Legion of Boom, yes, Seattle Seahawks champions. But they trusted their culture, they trusted their coach, and they trusted their quarterback. And now all of a sudden they've won 4 of 5. And I understand, like, people hear Anthony Lynn and they're like, what are you, the hottest team in football? We got teams on 6-game winning streaks, 8-game winning streaks. But I get what he's saying. A team that starts 0-2 and now their only loss in the last 5 games was a 2-point loss to the Rams that they had a touchdown fourth quarter lead in. That they had a 1-point lead with a few minutes left in that game against the Rams. Like, Seattle to be able to say no. Even in a rebuilding year, we're not rebuilding. Even in a step back year, we're going to be in playoff contention. If the playoffs started today, they're in it. Like, so that is a credit to that organization as a whole. As far as this game goes, I think the Chargers are one of the 5 best teams in football. Their 2 losses this year are to the Chiefs and to the Rams. Everybody's losing to those teams. And so I think the Chargers have the edge, but I wouldn't put it past Seattle to be able to win this game, especially because it's at home. And I give them enormous credit for what they've done to be in this position so far this year.
All right, moving on to Thursday Night Football. Not a lot of people had heard the name Nick Mullins before last night, but he led the 49ers to a 34-3 beatdown of the Raiders. John Gruden in Oakland are now 1-7. Here's Gruden after the game.
The Oakland Raiders. The Oakland Raiders is a great organization. I know it's not looking pretty right now, but I've heard a lot of negativity, you know, over the last 6 or 7 months, and rightfully so. But we're going to build a championship football team here, and I know a lot of people, as players, as fans, and, you know, just in general, want to be a part of this.
CeCe, how have things gotten so bad for the Raiders?
And I this is where I'm conflicted, because I like to just be a little more patient. I've been watching the NFL for a long time, been involved with the NFL for a long time, so I don't like to overreact. But I just think over the course of a half a season that the NFL that John Gruden came back to is totally different than the NFL that he was expecting. And I believe that that's the reason why that he started the rebuild process after already being involved. Because I believe when he accepted the job, he thought he had a legitimate winner. He thought that he had in Carr one of the best quarterbacks that he had ever coached. But then after being there, realizing the Khalil Mack thing, the financial restriction that the organization was going to have, that I'm not going to have that player, so how am I going to move on from him? Amari Cooper, someone offered me a first-round pick. That's too hard. I mean, I can't turn that down. I got to get off of him. So now I'm in full rebuild mode. When they started the season, they had the oldest roster. So now the organization, they got to be confused. I know that their owner can't be, Mark Davis, he can't be pleased with what he's seeing. But can he step in? How much football does Mark Davis know? Does he have confidence in John Gruden? He signed into a 10-year deal. So when does that confidence run out? I don't believe that the owner can step in. I believe this is going to get worse. Gruden mentioned one word on his press conference that I'm just going to hang on. And he said, build. I don't believe John Gruden knows how to build a champion. All right? When he won a championship, he did that with Tony Dungy and what Tony Dungy had built. Now, he did take it over, and he did have Brad Johnson and Keyshawn, and their offense was the better offense of the Tampa Bay teams. But that was a defensive-dominant championship team that he inherited. So I don't believe John knows how to build a champion. He's going about it the wrong way. And I know this is common right now to not necessarily speak the truth or just make stuff up and just lie. But that's what John Gruden was doing. When he sat down with Howie Long, and he told him that lie that people are calling him, people are ringing off his phone. That's a blatant lie.
Let's let people, in case they missed it, real quick, let's let people see exactly what Chris is talking about. Play that if we can.
I got a cell phone just like you and everybody else. Right. And I get a lot of phone calls from people that are dying to come and play here. I'm just telling you, they're dying to play for the Raiders. Yeah. And to have salary cap space and to have a chance to talk to the people that you really want to wear the silver and black, the guys you really want to wear the silver and black and represent this team, that's exciting.
That right there is John Gruden playing the character of John Gruden. Play for the Raiders. What are you doing? Do you guys remember the comedian Andrew Dice Clay?
Yep.
He had the very vulgar stand-up act for years. That was an act. that he did long enough, it became who he was, and now there's great stories about Andrew Dice Clay walking around Hollywood, no cameras, no, to being that guy. Like, similar to how I think Sylvester Stallone believes he is Rocky. Like, he's taking steroids and thinks he's a boxer. Sometimes you play a character long enough, you become the character. John Gruden was playing that character on TV so long, I think he became him and stopped being the football coach. Because what's happened to the Oakland Raiders, you said you like to be patient. You know who doesn't get the luxury of being patient? The great fans of Oakland. The great fans of Oakland, who when he got there, he did not promise that they would contend for a championship in Vegas. That was part of it. But he said here. That's 2 years. That's what they got. They got 24 games left. Here's what I know. The Raiders in the 3 years before John Gruden got there were 25 and 23. The Raiders going into the final month of last season, had won 18 of their previous 28 games. And what we saw last night was a travesty. Like, I heard after they traded Khalil Mack, people were saying, well, when the team wasn't even a top 20 defense, how important could Khalil Mack be? Well, maybe Khalil Mack was the single most important player in the league. Maybe he was the only thing holding that damn thing together, because they just now got rid of Amari Cooper, and this was going sideways well before that. I agree with you that that is what he's saying there is also, not only is the Raiders part laughable, it's provably false.
Yes.
Like, what active NFL players, A, have John Gruden's phone number, B, are...
He has no connection to the modern player. He has no connection through working on television, building relationships with players. Like, he just made that up. Like, he's trying to give people a sense of hope compared to it's an all-out rebuild, and I'm doing this by the seat of my pants, because that's what I see. You cannot build in the NFL a roster full of stockpiling number one draft picks. There's no winning team out there that's done it. Now, over the period of years, but you're not going to, over 2 or 3 years, think I'm going to get 5 to 7 number one picks and they're going to be ready to play. No, this is a grown man league, and that's what he thought. That's why he had the oldest roster. And now, with it being in disarray, when you lose the way they lose in embarrassing fashion, what you do is you have to overpay for free agents. So now you got to use all this money on these draft picks, and then you have to overpay free agents. But your draft picks, if they're Amari Cooper and they're Khalil Mack, I'm not going to re-sign them. So you don't have a structure of how you're going to move into the future.
You don't have a plan. And I thought Charles Robinson of Yahoo wrote a great article this morning that juxtaposed what happened with the Rams and Stan Kroenke when they found out they were going from St. Louis to Los Angeles, and their approach. We are stockpiling talent. We are hiring the brightest young mind we can find. We are trading up to get the number one quarterback in the draft. And we are trying to come into a new city supercharged. One of the reasons Oakland was given the opportunity to go to Las Vegas was because they looked like they were poised to be a successful franchise. Now, you not only do the fans in Oakland have to be like, the hell am I here for? What are people in Vegas excited about?
Yeah, listen, it was embarrassing. It was embarrassing for John Gruden. It was an indictment on coaching. They got better players on Oakland than they had in San Francisco. And it's also, we need to look on the other sideline and see what you can do. I believe that Kyle Shanahan is a quarterback whisperer. What he did with Nick Mullins,
oh my God,
the third stringer, let him know on Monday. This was a Thursday night game. And had this kid ready to play football against a John Gruden team that looked like it was not prepared. So it's an indictment on the National Football League, the product they put out there. It's an indictment to Raiders fans out there. And it's an indictment that we think that John Gruden is that great coach. Because is he a good coach, or is he some character off of television? That's what people should be looking at right now.
Listen, Nick, we at Fox got very lucky with the Thursday Night Football schedule this year. We had amazing games to start, and the rest of the week we have Carolina, Pittsburgh next week. There's New Orleans, Dallas later. We have great games. This game, obviously, it's 2 1-win teams. The Niners got an excuse. Their quarterback blew out his knee against the Chiefs early in the year, and it derailed everything. What's the Raiders' excuse? What's the Raiders' excuse for being the other half of a one-win matchup halfway through the season? The only major change, that guy.
Coming up, can the Ravens slow down James Conner and the Steelers? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First things first, former Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott joins the show. Bart, thanks,
thanks, sir,
for being here.
I'm like the inappropriate cousin that comes over for Christmas.
Yeah. And he's like the inappropriate uncle that's always here. Oh, sorry, see.
Deacon do wrong.
Write that down.
You're matching. You're all matching.
Welcome. Hey, great, you look good. Alike. Appreciate it, Brody.
I like it. I like it.
The He's one of the guys calling Gruden, though.
Yeah. No doubt. Trying to come out of retirement.
Heck yeah. They're the, they the oldest team in the NFL, right? Might as well add me to the fray.
The Steelers head to Baltimore in an AFC North matchup this weekend. Helping lead the way for Pittsburgh is James Conner, who had a heavy workload in the absence of Le'Veon Bell. Conner is third in the league in yards and second in rushing touchdowns. In fact, he's been so good, Baltimore defensive coordinator Wink Martindale says he would rather face Le'Veon Bell.
I hope he shows up like right before the game and they want to play him. It's like this. I think it's like since 2015, if you look at their stats, there's a lot of stats in different categories that the Steelers are actually better without him. You know, they're better in those categories since 2015 without Le'Veon, so that might be why he's riding a jet ski down in Miami right now. I don't know.
Shots fired.
Is Wink right? Are the Steelers better without L. Bell?
I'm not falling for the pump fake. Hell no. He ain't better than Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell's the best back in the NFL, and he hopes that he's going to step off and call in and play before because he knows that he needs that hamstring helper right now. You know, you talk about a guy who I think is a better version of Todd Gurley. He's been doing it for a longer period of time.
Wow.
He's the best back. He's the most feared back. He's the best slot receiver at running back in the game. And, yeah, James Conner's just a nice story. But the Ravens shut him down, you know, the last time they played. Le'Veon Bell has had success against the Ravens. And also, you don't really prepare for James Conner when you drop that eighth man in the box. You drop that eighth man in the box for Le'Veon Bell, which opens everything up for Antonio Brown. That's why Antonio Brown loves when Le'Veon Bell's in the backfield. Juju gets work because now you can double-team Antonio Brown and Juju is able to work. You don't know who to double, who to take away when Lev Bell is back there.
But, Sarah, you were on to this earlier. You said, Chris, is this a little coach speak? Yeah, absolutely. Coach trying to talk to the troops and everything to make sure they're still as focused as if Le'Veon Bell was there, because typically, sometimes it's just human nature. You have a guy who's a sub. The guys don't necessarily have the focus, the detail, and everything. So I got it. Wink, 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 wink. Martindale there, letting the defenders know. Oh no, they're actually better. And there are some stats that if you happen to look at them the right way, that you could try to draw that conclusion. But what they can do with Conner is less thing. They have less options compared to Le'Veon Bell. This Baltimore defense, they'll be prepared because this is a rivalry game.
Oh, yeah.
This is not about one player, so they'll come in focused. But, Wink, I understand. I understand what you're trying to do there.
Listen, I hate to say this because it's very off-brand for me, and it might undercut some points I'm going to make later in the show. But at times, stats lie, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
At times,
absolutely.
You can make stats to say what you want to them to say. Here's a stat. Pats have a higher win percentage without Rob Gronkowski than with him. Anybody think they're better without Rob Gronkowski than with him? I understand that Le'Veon Bell threw eight games last year versus James Conner threw eight games this year. Well, wow, James Conner's been better. Now, we also know that Le'Veon Bell's first three games last year were very slow because he had missed all of training camp, wasn't someone he was used to. But here's the other thing that we have to be careful about when we look at James Conner, the receiver. And by the way, James Conner sat right here, and I told him at the beginning of the year, I doubted him. I thought he was just replacement-level player. He's proven to be more than that. He is a starting-caliber running back in the league. And even if you think Bart is overstating Le'Veon Bell as the best running back, everyone knows he's one of the three or four best, and James Conner isn't that. But what people are missing in some of this side-by-side analysis is we've never seen Le'Veon Bell play in 2018 NFL. We've never seen Le'Veon Bell play what his numbers would be as a receiver in this offensive explosion in this NFL where everyone is throwing for 300 yards a game, where everyone's scoring is at an all-time record. So it's one thing to say, well, look at his numbers last year to this year. Man, the NFL has changed drastically in just 1 year.
Yes.
We get it every single week from the league. See, here's the new record this week. Here's the new passing record. Here's the new mark. So in that regard, James Conner's done a great job filling in for Le'Veon Bell. But a full-strength Le'Veon Bell, of course, presents more problems than a full-strength James Conner.
Bart, you mentioned that they shut down Conner in week four. Pittsburgh reeled off three straight wins since that loss. Can the Ravens take anything from that win?
Well, absolutely. Brown went off on them to the tune, I believe, of over 100 yards receiving, you know, 71-yard touchdown. You know, he's Joe Flacco's deep threat. He opens everything up.
You're not talking Antonio Brown. You're talking John Brown.
John Brown.
Ravens.
John Brown. Yes. You know, John Brown, and he's the guy that stretches the field. But also, I'm excited to see what Ty Montgomery, you know, brings to the table, you know, his explosive ability, because now that's their Tariq Hill right now. You talk about maybe putting Lamar Jackson in the backfield, doing some RPO, some speed options. Now that opens everything up as well. We've yet to really see Lamar Jackson throw the ball. You know the option pass is coming. All those gadgets are coming, and they've been setting those things up for weeks on top of weeks. But, Montgomery is going to be a huge addition to them because he gives them an elite home run hitter. They give him a slot receiver, but also give him a home run running back. I wonder what number is he going to wear. I don't know yet what number he's going to wear to say I'm a receiver or a running
back. Do you think, obviously, then he'll be active this week? I would think that you would be less certain of that.
I like the way that Bart's looking at it. From a Wildcat standpoint, if Bart was a defender, what he wouldn't want to see, he wouldn't want to see Montgomery in the backfield. He wouldn't want to see the quarterback back there. That's tough. Something that I had not even looked at. And if I do put him in a Wildcat package, there's more of a chance him being effective in this game because it's a small package.
Right.
Because if you look at Lamar's package, it's small. Right. You could get him up to speed, Montgomery on that. That's really interesting. I'm gonna have to write that one down.
Because you think about the decoy. What's the big trend now? Everybody who has, you know, either it's Kansas City or whether it's Chicago, they got the jet sweep, right?
Yep.
What it does, it creates pause for the defensive ends. So now it opens up your run game and you're using him as a decoy because you know he has speed, so he's opened up the field. So now the Ravens have speed all over the place at every different level, which puts a lot of pressure on this Pittsburgh Steelers defense, because what happens is, how does the Pittsburgh Steelers always lose to the Pats? Because they're able to spread them out, because they're a linebacker-based system, and now you get your matchups. You get your linebackers against receivers, and that can't happen. And now the safeties aren't great as well, so now your offense is able to move down the field.
Five quarters ago, the Baltimore Ravens were maybe the surprise story of the NFL season. Mm-hmm. They were 4-2 with the number one defense and a 10-point fourth quarter lead on New Orleans. They blew that game. They then lost last week. Over the last 2 weeks, their defense after the first 6 weeks of the year allowing 13 points a game. Now they're allowing 30 points a game over the last 2 weeks. If Baltimore can't win this game at home, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is why we thought we needed to draft a new quarterback. This is why we didn't think we were going to contend for a divisional championship this year. This is the Pittsburgh, I believe, has turned their season around from 1-2-1 to the three straight wins. I think Pittsburgh is back to being Pittsburgh. Baltimore's season is about to be fully turned around in the wrong direction if they can't win this home game against their rival.
All right, Bart, we're going to make you stay right here. Coming up, can Aaron Rodgers take down Tom Brady in Foxborough? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Bart Scott. Let's talk about the marquee matchup of the weekend. Aaron Rodgers heading to Foxborough to face Tom Brady. These two squaring off as starters for just the second time ever. Two of the best to ever play the position. Head coach Mike McCarthy didn't exactly undersell the matchup. Take a listen.
Two of the best all time. I mean, I think you really appreciate not only what they do on the field from a quarterback position, but, you know, really their contributions to the game of football. And then on top of that, what they do as men outside of the game is football. But, I mean, this is if you wanted to study how to play quarterback, then you need to watch that game Sunday night.
Bart, what's the key to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers upsetting Tom Brady and the Patriots?
Understanding exactly what their recipe is, right? They're going to defer, get the ball, and they try and score right before the half, come out before the half, go up by two possessions, and then make you one-dimensional. I mean, the Green Bay is one-dimensional anyway, but they really make you one-dimensional, make you have to throw the ball. The problem that the Patriots are going to have are the fact that they really don't have a pass rusher. And if you can't put pressure on Aaron Rodgers, he's going to eat you alive. It may come down to who has the ball less, who has the ball last. Mm-hmm. What I like about Green Bay, they came out and they got in the faces of the Rams last week. But they have the one player that maybe can present some pressure on the quarterback in Clay Matthews. And when I don't see that same player on the other side when I look at the Patriots, somebody that can get pressure on the quarterback. They can disrupt, and Pettine's played against Brady 100 times, you know, being with the Jets, you know, and also being a member, you know, being a defense coordinator for the Buffalo Bills. So he understands what some of the rules and some of the tells are. We all have little secrets in our little notebook, and we have a couple on Tom Brady, and I know he's going to use them. He's going to get Tom Brady off his spot, understanding that he can't throw on the run accurately. The other guy on the other sideline is better outside throwing the ball on the move.
Yeah, I did like the intensity for which Green Bay did go after the Rams. Now, if they're going to be able to take that from the West Coast, be able to package that back to Green Bay, put it back on a plane,
yeah,
and be able to bring it to Gillette, that's going to be the big question in this game. Interior-wise, can guys like Kenny Clark, can they affect Brady to be able to get him off the spot and to be able to do it early in the game? You can't let Tom Brady get comfortable.
Right.
Typically, that first quarter, when you beat Tom Brady, that first quarter goes really, really rough for him. How many times can you get him on the seat of his pants? Not necessarily sack him, but how many times can you contact him to make the game difficult? That is the pressure on Green Bay. For Aaron Rodgers, he knows that he's got to be able to score points. Even last week, he can't rely on getting the ball back with the kick return. He's got to be able to get touchdown. There were some opportunities
early
in the game that they did not take advantage of, and I'm sure Aaron is trying to get off to a blazing hot start to try to put Tom Brady and the Pats under pressure there at home where they are almost unbeatable.
Listen, if Sony Michel does not play, and he didn't play last week, he's been limited in practice all week, I think this game skews to advantage Packers. I understand it's in Gillette. I understand that the Pats have won five in a row. I get it. But the Patriots offense this year, when they haven't had a consistent running game, has been mediocre.
That's true.
Their standards. They haven't broken 30 points once without the consistent running game. The one time they did it without the consistent running game, they had two special teams touchdowns. So as far as their offense putting up multiple touchdowns, it's been very difficult when it's just been on Tom Brady's arm. Additionally, the Packers, I don't like that they got rid of HaHa Clinton Dix, but they have a stud rookie corner in Jair Alexander,
absolutely,
who's going to be playing on the outside. Whether that's Hogan or Gordon, whomever that is, they will not ever have to worry about doubling him. They could let him. They were leaving Jair Alexander one-on-one on Brandon Cooks last week, and he did a good job there. So if Gronk, even if Gronk plays, he was out of practice yesterday, he's going to be limited. We know that. It almost feels to me like because he hasn't been fully healthy all year, that they have been saving Gronk for a couple big plays late. We've seen this in a few of the Patriots wins. Against the Chiefs, they did it. Last week, they did it. It's like, all right, we don't know how many times Gronk can really, we can get the engine up to 90. It seems like they're being cautious with him because of his health. If they also don't have Sony Michel, they're limited on options outside of Julian Edelman.
What about Belichick's approach then? You talk about the Packers how they attack. Does Belichick's approach change at all, or what they do given these circumstances?
Well, this is a familiar chess match between Pettine and Belichick and McDaniels. Oh. They've done this over and over again. He understands exactly what he's going to get, and he understands that he's probably going to see the Spartan package. And what's the Spartan package? The Spartan package is a package where Pettine, you know, comes out with a lot of defensive backs, a lot of safeties, a lot of corners, and what he does is he baits you to run the ball. That's why Sony Michel is so important. Because what he's going to say is, if Brady's handing it off, he ain't throwing it. And if he ain't throwing it, he can't beat us. They'll make them, you know, have 120, 200 yards rushing. But as long as he's not airing that thing out, I'm fine with that. No explosive plays, no big plays over 20. So with that being said, he's going to make Sony Michel or whoever's there at running back, you know, rush the ball 20, 30 times and see if they can be patient, understanding that he's never had a quarterback on the other side that can put pressure back on Brady so that when he gets out there, he has to score.
Sarah, typically in these games, and going back to especially the Peyton Manning games, when Peyton Manning faced Tom Brady, Belichick was a different coach. That in those games, you could see he was not very conservative. He was very, very aggressive. They would also run more trick plays. They're going to go for it on fourth down more. They're going to run more trick plays, and they're going to be aggressive in their overall approach, knowing that the other guy, and that being Aaron Rodgers compared to Peyton Manning, we don't want to give him the ball. So their overall approach as a team going into these games, it's very, very different than the normal New England approach where they say, we're going to defer, we're going to give you the football, we're going to sit back, try to figure out what you're doing, and try to put you in checkmate later in the fourth quarter. No, they're going to be very, very aggressive because of his respect, and he said that in the press conference when he spoke about Aaron Rodgers.
All right, you didn't tell me to write that down, but I did write down Spartan package. Spartan now, that's package. Interesting because you know what it reminded me of? The opposite of the way people have played Dallas this year. Dallas this year, they have basically said, you got to throw it. What are you thinking? Yeah. We got single high safety. Everyone's one-on-one. Mm-hmm. We want you to throw it, so we're going to give you a defensive look where you'd feel foolish if you don't. Now, against the Patriots, that could be particularly effective just in this regard. Brady has made a career of, but part of his greatness has been always having no ego to the position. If it is a front where I'm supposed to run,
yes,
I will check into a run.
Right.
If you have small people out there, I will trust my big people to run over you, which is why we've seen games where the Pats run the ball 35, 38 times, even if we don't know that they have great running, if they have a great running back. So that's a really interesting.
They're going to play him in two-man, right? And they're going to make Brady have to throw in the tight windows. And what happens is he starts to hear ghosts because he has that eternal clock. He knows that he has somebody that has respect on the edge and Clay Matthews, somebody that can get to him eventually, and he starts seeing ghosts. We use that in the AFC championship, well, not the divisional championship or the divisional playoff round. Game, the divisional round, to really confuse him because now you can have complex, you know, coverages, all those motions and things like that. Now you have a defensive back talking to a defensive back opposed to a defensive back talking to a linebacker. You can't pass certain route combinations, rub routes, combinations, pick routes, and all those things.
And the best way, you taught me this, see, the best way to get a team out of playing two-man is to have the quarterback run.
Yes.
And Brady ain't never going to run.
Right. Twice a year. It's in his contract.
Twice a year.
Bart, stacked NFC North for the Packers, especially given the way the game ended last week. Yes. What's the sense of desperation? How do you expect them to be feeling coming into this one?
Well, I think they understand the sense of urgency to stay pace with Minnesota. I don't think they really see Chicago as a legitimate threat. They have a lot of flaws, mainly their quarterback. They understand that Kirk Cousins can carry a football team. You know, Thielen's, you know, out of his mind right now, and Diggs and everybody, they're playing well. But I think they feel that, you know, if they just stay the course, continue to get healthier and healthier, I think they made those moves because they have the respect for Jair, for Josh Jackson, for a lot of those guys back there, understanding that they can get something in return.
They realize also that the Saints are 6-1. So everyone talked about the Rams. The Rams 8-0. All right, them first two slots right now. So now you want to go on the road? You want to be a wild card? I don't believe they want to be a wild card. So I believe a sense of urgency kicks in. And I believe that in this game, they try to get their season turned around.
All right, Bart, we're going to see you a little bit later in the show. Don't go anywhere. Coming up, though, is there anything Baker Mayfield can do to keep up with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs? That's next on First. The Fox NFL doubleheader starting with Matt Ryan and the Falcons taking on Adrian Peterson in Washington. Then it's America's Game of the Week as Todd Gurley and the undefeated Rams battle Drew Brees and the Saints. It's all on Fox and the Fox Sports app. You can check your local listings.
Vegas finally caught up with the Panthers after being undervalued the last few weeks, 6.5 point favorites this week.
We'll get to Baker versus Mahomes in a minute, but first, Thursday Night Football, Nick Mullins throws to George Kittle. Nice one-handed grab.
Pro Football Focus has him the best tight end first half of the season. Really excited. He had an 80-yard play. He's had a 72-yard play earlier in the season. Man, a lot of people don't know about him.
He's been great.
Cavs, Kings, Larry Nance posterizes Mason Plumlee with a nice one-handed jam.
Cavs had a good first quarter in this game. Got dominated in the last three quarters of this game. But it's sad times for me in Cleveland, see.
Sad.
My man JR wants
sad
out.
Sad might be an understatement.
I'm just talking about for me personally, Sarah. Like, if my man JR leaves, all I got left there is Jetty. Oh, wow.
Oh, Plumlee is about
same
it.
Same game.
He will Larry go Nance after. I'm so glad.
Again.
Don't be discouraged.
Revenge.
Yeah. I'm on a poster, but now you're on a poster. Let me get some of this.
I like that. That's a heck of a play.
That
both those guys. I mean,
play.
Just meet him at the apex. Go get it, Plumlee. Nance tried to dunk on him in the exact same place with the exact same dunk.
Moving on to a matchup of two of the league's young stars, Patrick Mahomes and the high-powered Chiefs offense heading into Cleveland to take on Baker Mayfield and the Browns. These two have been connected since they both played at Texas Tech. Baker Mayfield spoke on what has made Mahomes so successful so quickly.
He just has that presence about him that you want to be around. You gravitate towards that, and so it's fun to see him grow.
Yeah, I mean, Baker's an awesome dude. I mean, he's a great leader. He has a ton of passion, and I mean, his talent's through the roof. I mean, he's going to keep getting better every single week, and I mean, he's already had a lot of success, and I mean, the sky's the limit for him.
You and Patrick have kind of crossed paths all across the line. You guys are now playing in the NFL. Does this feel like it could be the start of a quarterback rivalry like Brady Manning or something of that level?
Well, I would absolutely not say that it's going to be Brady Manning right now, but that's humbling to be in that conversation, you know. But we'll see. You know, if he keeps playing that way, there's no reason why it wouldn't be on his side of things. And now I just got to pick up my side and play better.
Definitely not there yet. But, CeCe, which quarterback would you rather build around, Patrick Mahomes or Baker Mayfield?
This is very, very difficult. I believe both of them are not your typical traditional NFL quarterbacks. You have one playing for a franchise who doesn't currently have a coach, and then one of the coaches who I respect as an offensive mind, Andy Reid. So if I have a son and he's a quarterback, where would I rather him? Be in Cleveland with a owner that in 6 years has had five different coaches, three or four different general managers. Like, it's the system around it. Right now, I got to say Andy Reid with Patty Mahomes. I got to go with Patty Mahomes because where he is. Like, I got to trust Andy Reid has done this before. Cleveland has messed this up before. So I believe in both of their talent. I believe both of them have the intangible things as far as leadership, meaning they can lead grown men. I believe that they're very, very special. But Patty Mahomes, I'm seeing him do it. I'm seeing him do it. I'm seeing him making plays. I'm seeing him making throws. I'm not projecting anymore. I'm just projecting with Baker Mayfield because he hadn't been supported. And we have to, he is at least 1 year behind developmental of Patty Holmes, at least.
He's a year behind developmentally, even though he's actually older as far as like on the calendar. Baker Mayfield hosted Pat Mahomes, and when Pat Mahomes was visiting Texas Tech, they then obviously played each other once when Baker was at Oklahoma, and that game was bananas, and I'll show you that game in a minute. But to me, it's not a hard question. And it's not because I don't like Baker. I think Baker's going to be a stud. But as C put it, Pat Mahomes is a stud right now. Pat Mahomes, you could have any name opposite Pat Mahomes right now and ask me that question. Who would you rather build around, Pat Mahomes or pick any player in football? And I would take Patrick Mahomes. Through eight games this year, he's on pace for 52 touchdowns and 5,000 yards. Now, is he in the best situation a young quarterback can be in? Absolutely. Not just because of Andy Reid, but because of the embarrassment of riches of weapons he has.
Absolutely.
And so he is in a perfect situation. But there have been other quarterbacks, young quarterbacks, maybe not this year, but in the past, in equally as advantageous situations, and nobody's done what Pat Mahomes has done. And he's not doing it against the Cardinals and the Niners every week. He's done it on the road against tough opponents. So the other reason is I do think what your first football experiences are, those circumstances you can't control, I think they have a big impact on what your trajectory is. I think if they have any impact whatsoever, for Pat Mahomes, it's been all positive. And for Baker Mayfield, it's been a lot more tumultuous.
Look what they did for Patty Mahomes after he started one game. The guys in front of him, Alex Smith, they traded him out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
Nice and good. So there's no distraction.
They started one game last year, week 17.
There's a smooth transition. He's got the leading rusher in the NFL as a tailback. He's got an up-and-coming star receiver in Tyreek Hill. And then he's got Kelce, arguably the one, two, or three best tight end in football. Oh, that's not enough. We're going to go out and get Sammy Watkins for him. So it's just hard for me. I've been cheering for Baker. I think Baker is a stud. I thought he was going to be a stud when I saw him devour Ohio State in Ohio Stadium. But what Patty Mahomes has working for him, I know you have to be supported in the NFL. And the support that he has around him right now is leading to him having this special season.
What can Baker do moving forward now with a new coach or interim coach, what can he do now for the remainder of the season moving forward?
Survive.
Plucked
it from my brain. Exactly. The rest of the year for Baker, it's about survival.
Everyone is not cut out, Sarah, to play in the NFL. And right now, you start to see these young quarterbacks, they have not faced the type of adversity that they're facing. Baker Mayfield, after 8 weeks, we said, man, they've won two more games they've won the last 2 years. Coach gets fired. Offense coordinator gets fired. He comes to work, is like, you know something? This is not the smooth transition from Bob Stoops to Lincoln Riley. Like, this is real life. There's real consequences, and the pressure on him is monumental. Patty Mahomes went through the offseason, smooth transition. He started the season fresh. He didn't get hit. If Baker needs to survive this season, not get some of the football knocked out of him, so when he does come back with this new coach, with this new setup, that he is ready and his mind is fresh and ready to be a star in this league.
And talk about for Baker not only having a coaching change, but having it go from where the head coach, we saw it on Hard Knocks, and we know Hugh's history, where the head coach is going to be an offensive-minded, quarterback-friendly, focus-on-you guy. Todd Haley focused on you. They're both out the building. Now we got wire-rimmed glasses. Greg Williams cut off the head and the body will die. Like, you've got – he's focused on the defense. Like, so Baker went from having all this attention in a positive way to having a lot less attention. And so the one way it works in his advantage is this. For a number one pick – who I actually think has played well this year, but the numbers are obviously not pretty, nobody's blaming any of this on him. Right. Like, usually number one picks are under a lot of scrutiny. Jared Goff was his rookie year. Mitch Trubisky even as the number two pick. Like, nobody's saying Baker's the problem with the Cleveland Browns. Now, I don't know what's going to happen in this game, but I just want to show America what happened the last time these two guys played, because it's one of the most bananas college football games ever. Texas Tech, Oklahoma. All right, that's the score up top, 66-59. I don't know if you see that. My guy Patty Mahomes threw the ball 88 times for 734 yards in a football game. Baker only had to throw it 36 times to put up 545. Baker threw for 7 touchdowns. Patty Mahomes threw for 5 touchdowns. It was one of the craziest college football games ever.
Baker throws for 7 touchdowns. He's got Lincoln Riley calling plays for him, who probably better than whoever's going to be calling plays for him this weekend. And I know his wide receiving core definitely had more speed and depth than the Browns, what they have right now. So Baker trying to go back to Oklahoma. He's making a lot of money there, too. I was like, oh, you got to take a pay cut.
It's about a wash. Number one overall pick versus Oklahoma.
What can the Browns do to upset the Chiefs?
Oh, pray. They ain't going to win this game.
No, this is what's got to happen. And this is real. This is not make-believe. Their defense has been playing an unbelievable level. That's the Cleveland Browns. They've been turning the ball over at a record-breaking pace. But their offense, the Browns, hadn't taken advantage of. They need to be able to create 4 turnovers, and they need to be able to score 3 touchdowns off those turnovers. Nick, we talked this morning about the turnovers.
This is insane. The Browns have created 22 turnovers this year, the most in football by a wide margin. They have scored 34 points off those 22 turnovers. That's embarrassing. Like, when C says they got to create 4, they're averaging 3 a game.
So I'm giving people real things. Real things can happen. Create 1 more turnover and the offense do something with it when you get the ball.
Survive and pray.
Survive and pray.
That's what I'm taking. Yeah. Coming up, can the Chargers pull out a crucial road win in Seattle? That's next on First Things First. Start your morning. Not a lot of people had heard the name Nick Mullins before last night, but he led the 49ers to a 34-3 beatdown of the Raiders. John Gruden and Oakland are now 1-7. CeCe, what's gone so wrong for the Raiders?
Man, John Gruden them got beat by a dude who wasn't even official on Twitter before the game started. Twitter didn't even know the dude. Not verified.
He got verified at halftime.
Brett Favre sent out a tweet winching him from Southern Miss. That's his squad. Man, sent him out a tweet. They verified dude before the end of the game, man.
John Gruden, you got a $100 million contract. You owe me $8,000 of it. Because I heard Nick Mullins was starting. I saw that the Niners were still favored by 1.5. I teased the Raiders with everything this weekend. Raiders plus 7.5 in the Panthers. And Raiders plus 7.5 in the Chiefs. Raiders plus 7.5 in the Vikings. They're all dead. It's Sunday hasn't even started. They're all dead.
He don't listen to me. What did I say yesterday on the show? I didn't know who the quarterback was going to be, but Kyle Shanahan is the real quarterback.
How
whisperer.
Do you let Nick Mullins blow you out? Gruden, I'm going to need something on it.
I need, out of football. You need to listen to me.
Okay.
On to the NBA. Draymond Green has been very transparent about his goals for the season when asked about winning Defensive Player of the Year. He said, quote, I need that bad.
Nick, yeah, he does.
Why is this so important?
I'm rooting for Draymond to get Defensive Player of the Year this year. If I had a vote, which, by the way, NBA, what the hell? I would vote for him sight unseen. You know, here's why it's so important to Draymond. Here's why. If he gets Defensive Player of the Year, he's eligible for that super max, that extra $60 million they can put on top of an offer.
Okay, yeah.
I'll tell you this much. You know who's not rooting for him to get Defensive Player of the Year? Joe Lacob.
Yep.
Those Warriors ownership. Because Draymond's not going to take it kindly if he's eligible and they don't give it to him. Draymond, playing best defense of your life. I've never seen you play any better. Listen, Warriors, you might have to make a choice. Draymond or KD, Draymond or Clay. I don't know. I think Draymond deserves the award already.
I think Draymond is on the board to get it. And the reason why, because I watch him on the offensive end. He ain't exerting much energy on that offensive end.
No.
All right, he is resting up. So, yes, Draymond, defensive player, it's on the board. And Steph for MVP. Yes, the Warriors can win awards. Yes, they can.
And after that, maybe it'll be a Draymond, Steph 1-2 punch.
The Sixers beat the Clippers 122-113. They were led by a monster game from Joel Embiid, who had 41 points, 13 rebounds. Nick, is this the level Embiid has to play at for the Sixers to be successful?
Right now, it basically is at least 30-10. This is his sixth 30-10 game of the year. And see, your preseason MVP pick, Joel Embiid, is playing up to those standards. I'll also add this. I know everyone's down on the East. Three of the eight best players in basketball, nearly half, are in the East. Kawhi?
Yes.
Joel Embiid and Giannis. Like, I mean, Joel is holding up his end of the bargain. Ben Simmons, got to shoot a little bit better. Until then, Joel's got to do this.
I swear, you ain't going to listen to me about that shooting. You ain't going to listen to me about the last segment. Joel Embiid, this is the way he's got to play, though. They don't have the strong bench that they had last season. And until, my man, he's injured.
Wilson Chandler.
Good job. Until he comes back, he's going to be a significant contributor to their rotation this year. Yes, Joel Embiid, this is what we need to see. No minutes restriction. He's a special basketball player.
I listened to you on how to beat two-man, though, mobile quarterbacks. I know you were surprised.
Finally, the Celtics got a big win over the previously undefeated Milwaukee Bucks. Boston hit a franchise record 24 threes with Kyrie Irving leading the way with 28 points. Giannis, meanwhile, dropped 33 and 11 in the losing effort. Nick, how impressed were you with Kyrie and the Celtics last night?
All right, all credit to Kyrie. I was hard on him at the beginning of the year. I think it was justified. He had been playing the worst basketball I'd seen him play as a pro. The last two games, he's been very good. And yesterday, he overcame some stuff. A couple minutes left in the first half, Kyrie had 4 points. He was not playing well. The Celtics were playing well. He wasn't. He had a couple key threes, one in the corner, I think we're showing right there, and then one at the top of the key to end the first half, and then he was a monster in the second half. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the Bucks should be very encouraged by this, though. The Celtics hit 24 threes, see?
Yeah.
That's happened.
Franchise record.
Well, it's one off the NBA record. It's only happened 9 times in the history of basketball. And those teams are 9-0. And the Bucks, Giannis had a shot at the rim to tie it with
Little Bunny
with, what, 12 seconds left?
Yep.
Here's the reason I think the Bucks should be encouraged. Was the Celtics shot out of their mind. But what the Celtics' identity is defense. And they had nothing for Giannis. I know Jaylen Brown wasn't there, but they had nothing for Giannis. He didn't take jump shots. Nope, I'm just going to get to the rim on you guys. So it's a great win by the Celtics against the up-to-this-point undefeated Bucks. But what they did, I don't think is duplicable, hitting 24 threes. Giannis getting that work, that you can repeat time and time again.
The Celtics did shoot the ball spectacular, and they were absent Jaylen Brown in London. But there are a couple of things. Kyrie did look special. 2 games in a row, he looked like the best Celtics. And Gordon Hayward, to me, I thought that he had a little more explosion, a little more bounce, was knocking down the 3-ball, too. So if he's going to continue to improve, which I believe that he will, just like Paul George, as we watched him, his overall stamina, his overall athleticism, it started to come back, and I believe that Gordon's going to be the same way. One thing that just a little puzzling to me is I haven't seen Tatum get hot and Kyrie get hot. I just like to be able to see that. I know Tatum is the future, But if the Celtics are going to have a special season, they're going to have times where Tatum can catch fire and Kyrie can catch fire. I just haven't seen it yet.
Part of that's just because Kyrie's only played well the last two games, so there haven't been a lot of instances. I think part of it also is the way Kyrie catches fire. Like, the way Kyrie gets off, nights like last night, he's hitting all his jump shots, so it's different. But typically...
But I saw Tatum go out of his way when Kyrie caught fire. He knew how to feed him.
He knew how to defer. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I just don't know if it flips the other way, because there was games earlier in the season where Tatum was their best player. It wasn't because Kyrie was trying to get him the basketball.
But I think Kyrie talked about that, though, and he said, I need to learn how to not necessarily be the guy always with the ball in my hand, always the one looking to score. He, of course, is a more attack-minded point guard. I think they figure that out. But to your point, I think that's why the Celtics are so good. They know who has the hot hand, and they're going to feed him and get him the ball.
And that is the part of Kyrie's game, assuming what he's back to being Kyrie Irving as opposed to the first couple weeks of the year, that he needs to evolve into. I mean, there's the famous line from his last year in Cleveland. Kyrie, play at a faster pace. We need to get other guys involved. And he says, that's LeBron's job. I can get my shot however. Well, they don't have LeBron.
That's what he told Ty Lue.
That's what he told Ty Lue reportedly. They don't have, like, on the Celtics, that's Kyrie's job. Kyrie's job is to be this great scorer and to be that other guy. That's the next evolution to his game. That once he takes that step, if he does, that's what moves him into the tier people wanted to put him in last year, which was MVP candidate. Once you can be a guy that can get the 25-plus and a teammate can get it because you're setting them up, that's what bumps him up, at least in my eyes, a tier. But I'm glad to see him back. He got his haircut, see? And all of a sudden, back to being Kyrie Irving.
Hot shower and shave, it does wonders for a man.
That's all it takes?
I mean, that is not all it takes, but that is a good start.
It's a good start.
We're going to go back to the NFL.
And as Dusty would say, also a cry.
A huge game.
Hot shower and a cry.
This weekend, the 5-2 Chargers heading to Seattle to face Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. Seattle has won 4 of the last 5 games.
Shave, brush,
and Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn referred to them as the hottest team in the NFL. CC, what will be the key for Russell Wilson and the Seahawks to continue with their winning ways against Phillip Rivers and the Chargers?
When you watch Seattle play, and they got off to such a rough start, so there's not a lot of optics on them, but you have to be impressed. Nick, you're impressed with the overall organization, what they're going through, even with their owner, legendary, passing away. They've been able to not throw this season away, not be in a total rebuild, but they've tried to change their culture, change their locker room. But what they've done on the offensive side is they have helped support Russell Wilson better. He's only running the ball 3 times a game. This is the lowest of his NFL career. It was legendary. For the last 2 years, the Seahawks have spent less resources on their offensive line than anyone in pro football. They're trying to change that, trying to get a little more physical. And Russell, you can see the difference. So how do they force it, take away the wide receivers and force Russell into running the football more? And the Chargers have done a tremendous job of protecting Phillip Rivers. So on both sides of the ball, both these quarterbacks are being supported by their offensive line, and that's why we're starting to see the Chargers and Phillip Rivers still play it at such a high level. And Russell is doing different things, but still getting it done.
These haven't been the two best teams in the league, but these have been either the two or two of the most impressive teams in the league as far as what they've, I feel, overcome. On the Chargers side of things, They start the year off by having the Chiefs beat them over the head. They have the Rams early on. They beat them, and they rally from there. Additionally, their best player is not Phillip Rivers. Their best player is Joey Bosa. Joey Bosa left practice midway through training camp with a significant foot injury. And then the next day, he avoided disaster. Day-to-day. This man been day-to-day for 3 months. I mean, and so he was my pick for Defensive Player of the Year. And that wasn't some hot take. He was one of the leading candidates in Vegas. They've been without him, and they're still 5-2, with the two losses being to the two best teams in football. And they're doing it with no home field advantage.
Yes.
They play road games and then more neutral site road games, like, because they have no home field at the StubHub Center. And then there's Seattle. Man, their coach, their quarterback, and their culture has proven that Pete Carroll was right. We do not rebuild here. We retool. and we might end. And in the beginning of the year, a couple tough road losses at Denver, and their other road loss was at Chicago. Since then, 4 out of 5 wins, with the one loss being a very close game to the Rams. Now, I will say this for the Seahawks, critical game here. Because after this week, Rams, Packers, Panthers, two of those on the road. One of those on Thursday Night Football, the Packers. So they have a brutal month coming starting right now, so it's a very important game for Seattle. But, Sarah, if the playoffs started today, Seattle would be in them. And I give them enormous credit, given all the turmoil this offseason, moving on from Sherman, Earl Thomas, not wanting to be there, then breaking his leg when he was playing at an all-pro level. Like, Seattle coming through to the other side to win 4 out of 5 has been very impressive.
What changed after those two losses for Seattle? On the field, what changed that allowed them?
Well, a lot of times, like Nick said, when the coach doesn't let chaos break out, and when you have a very, very demonstrative leader in Russell Wilson. Those things, they stabilize a franchise. You know you have a chance week in and week out when you have Russell, but man, Pete Carroll is one of the best leaders, one of the best evaluators of talent. So the players, the leaders that they did keep, Bobby Wagner, still one of the best, if not the best, middle linebacker in football on the defensive side. You have Russell on the offensive side. And, man, they're developing younger players. That's what they've been able to do. Guys that are starting to take some of those Richard Sherman, those roles, they got other guys who have really stepped up for that. So you got to give Snyder, the general manager, credit. He's one of the best in the business. And Pete Carroll, keeping control of that locker room, it's very important in the NFL, especially when you're on the losing streak to start the season.
And for the first time in years, they got a rushing game.
Yes.
They're 5th in the NFL in rushing, and that's without Russell. To your point, it's without Russell Wilson juicing those numbers with quarterback scrambles. I mean, Chris Carson's been great for them. They have a legitimate running game, and one good way to make sure your season doesn't bottom out, force turnovers, don't turn the ball over. They're top 3 in the NFL in turnovers forced. They're top 3 in the NFL in fewest turnovers committed. That makes them 2nd in the NFL in overall turnover margin. So that's a way that as they're retooling, they've been able to reel off these wins. I want to say one other thing about the Chargers, because everyone in the AFC is talking about the Chiefs and the running away with the one seed. The Patriots may be catching them. The Chargers do get to play the Chiefs again, right?
Yes.
They only have the two losses. And I mentioned how brutal Seattle's schedule is after this game. After this game, the Chargers get Oakland, Denver, Arizona. So the Chargers, if they win this game, could be poised to be something like 9-2 with the division still up for grabs because they get Kansas City again. That's just something to watch for.
All right, coming up, can Drew Brees and the Saints outscore the high-flying Rams? That's next on First Things First. Tomorrow, the 10th-ranked Buckeyes look to get back in business against Nebraska at 11:30 Eastern. Then Big 12 contenders West Virginia and Texas clash at 3:30 Eastern. Coming your way tomorrow on Fox. You can watch it anywhere on the Fox Sports app.
Dana Holgerson's a -160 favorite over Tom Herman in the postgame fight. Just letting you guys know.
Back here with Bart Scott talking America's game of the week.
Yeah,
the undefeated Rams heading into New Orleans
too.
To take on the Saints. Two of the NFL's best offenses facing off trying to secure prime playoff position. Here's Drew Brees on facing off against Los Angeles.
It's exciting. It's a great challenge. But here's the thing. It's one game, you know, and yes, it's a big game. Yes, it's against a great opponent who is undefeated and is playing exceptionally well right now. But for us, it's just another opportunity for us to take the next step, to continue to improve. I like the track that we're on, but we can still get better.
You know, we know what to expect. We know, you know the talent they got. You know, we got a great game plan. We've been putting in today, and you know, come Sunday, we're gonna just gotta put it all on paper, or put it all together, and go out there and you know, play our game.
Bert, which team has the edge on Sunday, the Saints or the Rams?
You gotta give it to the home team. You always have to give it to the home team. You got a West Coast team coming back, not East Coast, but coming in skipping time zones. Drew Brees, 77% completion rate. You know, Michael Thomas, nobody's talking about him, but I think the key to this game is going to be Mark Ingram. You know, people, you know, get it confused. They see Drew Brees and they know he likes to throw the ball a lot, but this is a power team disguised in a finesse team's type of outfit. You know, Sean Payton was the first boy wonder, right? I know Sean McVay, everybody knows that he's a boy wonder.
Yeah.
But Sean Payton has always been the guy that's innovated offense. Mm-hmm. Talking about Drew Brees and all the records and yards he's put up in the Superdome is going to be electric. It's going to come down to if they can really, Eli Apple can stand up in the pass game, right? Because we understand that Todd Gurley's going to get his. He's a dynamic player. But you got to be able to limit the guys on the outside. You got to say, okay, if you're going to beat me, you're going to beat me with Todd Gurley. You got to take their best player away and make them try and fight you left-handed.
What I'm looking at is I like Ingram. If he can be dominant in the running game, if you look for one is one hole in Wade Phillips and this defense that they have with a bunch of stars, every once in a while, they ain't that physical.
Yeah.
Now, I know Ndamukong Suh, I know he stomped a guy
you wouldn't
on Thanksgiving.
Think that, man, with Donald and Sue.
No, you wouldn't think that. But when you look at the numbers, you can run the ball at the Rams. What? And that's what you got to be able to do. I know Sean Payton, he disguises it because his passing attack a lot of times is short and quick. So it's another way to run the ball. But if they're going to be effective in the Superdome, Mercedes Superdome, Ingram's got to be able to touch the ball 20 times. And if he can do that, surprise the people by control time of possession, have Jared Goff get a little bit antsy, get that crowd noise, because they will have a huge home crowd advantage. Yeah. It's important in professional football. So if they can put that running game, which I believe can control that clock, make Goff, make him antsy, make him sense it's a big game, get behind. And I believe that's the way the Saints are able to get a win, Nick.
I feel like both these teams this week, privately in the building, the coaching staff at least said to each other, man, we got away with one last week. We've talked a lot about how the Rams could have lost, maybe should have lost if Ty Montgomery does what he's supposed to do. We haven't talked too much about how, because the Saints won by double digits, we haven't talked a lot about how close that game was going the other way. Vikings are getting ready to drive to go up two scores themselves, and Thielen fumbles. They then have the Stephon Diggs miscommunication, or he goes freelance or whatever it was, and it's a pick six the other way, and all of a sudden the Saints are off and running. Like, both these teams have to feel fortunate that they got the wins they got last week, and both these teams, I feel, go into this game saying, even though the Saints have the number one rush defense in football, which is shocking. I didn't believe it when I saw it. And even though the Rams are, and maybe that part of that might be because teams were throwing on them so much early. But regardless, and even though the Rams have been good at forcing turnovers, both these teams know the way we win this game is keep our offense on the field. The Saints are second in the league in points per drive. The Rams are third in the league in points per drive. These are the two most prolific offenses outside of Kansas City. This is going to be a game, to me, about which quarterback can make the most plays. I know what Todd Gurley's going to do. I'm comfortable and confident what Ingram and Kamara can do.
How confident are you in what Jared Goff can do? Because Todd Gurley talked about earlier this week.
That's what I'm saying, because I feel like, you know, last year, has he really made that next step? I don't know, because he has Boy Wonder over there, put him in the best positions. He has skilled players at every position. I want to see how does he perform when the pressure's put on him. You know, they identified that they really didn't have a pass rush, an outside pass rush, so they went out and made the move for Dante Fowler. I think that was a mission when they couldn't get to Aaron Rodgers last week, that they needed some help on the defensive side. And you talk about running the ball at him. Well, why can you run the ball at him and pound the ball at him? Because they have Mark Barron, who's a converted, you know, safety sitting there trying to anchor. It's great when you want to do all these complex coverages and blitz and things like that. But what happens when you run directly at a 220-pound, you know, linebacker? You get movement. And what happens is when you run at him, he can't use that speed to get over the top and run past blockers. And you make it a man's game. You make it a fight in the phone booth. And that's what you want to do. You want to make it a fight in the phone booth. And we've seen teams do this before. But the problem is, can you stay patient? Can you stay committed to the run, understanding that they're going to have opportunities, because they're going to fear Drew Brees as well. So they're not going to have that. You're going to have that light box. And then now you can spread them out and you run directly at Mark Barron. And I don't think he can hold up.
Yeah, I like the point about Mark Barron. It's a great point. If you get ahead, which the Rams try to do, then you want to play a lot of nickel and dime. Mark Barron, he's a tremendous asset. Alabama strong safety, All-American, originally drafted by the St. Louis Rams, now converted to being a linebacker.
Nobody. That's why he couldn't get off the hatches. That's why they put him in a box.
No, he's not a safety. He's always meant to be a linebacker. But when you get in a matchup like this, some of the things people might not be looking. Look for a guy like Taysom Hill, the all-everything quarterback from Brigham Young that they bring in. Third downs, bring him in Wildcat. Also watch for specialty plays, trick plays. Watch for Sean Payton, who last you say week. This is a. These coaches do have an ego. Sean Payton knows a lot of attention on Sean McVay, so watch specialty plays where you have to be like,
three quarterbacks last week in the game. They got Teddy Bridgewater.
That was,
can we get the double pass?
Yeah. That one. I'm glad you brought that up, Because it's real quick. We're getting in the weeds for a moment about specialty plays, about trick plays. The Rams, who won last week because of their special teams. The Saints did something last week that made no sense in real time. You had three quarterbacks on the field. The hell are you doing? Teddy Bridgewater, Taysom Hill, and Drew Brees. The only reason you
Young
do
rookie.
That. No, hold
Young
up.
Rookie.
No, but let me tell you. The only reason you do that is to set something up later in the year.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in real time, yeah, thank
I'm gonna
you. Write that down.
Listen, I had already wrote planting seeds.
Exactly. Right. So the only reason you do that in that game against the Vikings is because you're going to have that same formation out later in the year and put something else on film that they hadn't seen.
Another yet. Thing, little grasshoppers, because.
Oh, okay.
Okay, both of you. Sean Payton, he likes to needle people a little bit. Mm-hmm. Teddy Bridgewater coming back to Minnesota. Let me show you guys. Let me get a little Teddy Bridgewater on the field. So that's another little thing. I just believe some of those little intangibles, especially the special teams, when you're in a matchup like this, these are things that you should be watching that could tilt the game one way or another for one of these franchises.
Watch Cam Jordan as well. You know, Davenport has a toe. But inside the Superdome, you're going to have to go on a silent count. Can Jared Goff really play when he's going to be in a predictable type of snap count where guys can pin their ears off and get off the ball? That's why you're going to have to run the ball first to establish that you can have some play action, because you're not going to be able to hear early on in that game.
The Saints over the last few years have spent a lot of resources on the interior of their offensive line. Spent a first-round pick on Andres Pete. They converted him from tackle to guard. They traded Jimmy Graham for Max Unger years ago when Jimmy Graham was at the peak of his value.
Yep.
And they signed Larry Warford. Why do I bring those three guys up? They're two guards in the center. So they're up against the best interior pass rusher in the league in Aaron Donald. Maybe just the best pass rusher in the league in Aaron Donald, even though he's coming from the inside. Every team the Rams play,
Old Spice
see.
For you.
Right? Oh, yeah. Every team the Rams play, I look at their guard and centers, because Aaron Donald has the ability to ruin a game if those guys are not up to the task.
And Ndamukong Suh has been playing out of position. When they've been playing him at defensive end, he is not a defensive end. When you can move him next to Aaron Donald, like, I think that they're going to get even better by just even having someone like Dante Fowler who can come off that edge with some intensity.
And because you can't double both of them, right? You can money, you can squeeze it, but then when you squeeze inside, that means double the two interior guys, then it creates a short edge for a pass rusher. They didn't have a pass rusher that can take advantage of it. Now with Fowler, they have a guy that can win the one-on-one battle. But the problem is he's going against the right tackle who was an all-pro last year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happens when you're hitting the draft.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.